Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Pagans Tonight Radio Network, the voice of the pagan world. Pagans Tonight is sponsored by Witchschool.com, your anyone, anytime, anywhere magical education.
Hello, and thank you for tuning in today. I am Michael Graywolf, artist, traveler, all-around geek, witch, and brother initiate of the Unnamed Path. And if computer is working, this should be Matthew.
Yay! This is Matthew Sidney, writer, musician, minister, teacher of the Unnamed Path, and student of life.
And you are listening to Walking the Unnamed Path. On this podcast, we discuss the teachings and techniques given to us by the ancestors of men who love men that were laid out by our late founder, Hyperion. We also touch on topics and ideas pertaining to queer pagan men in general. We're glad you've decided to join us today, and we hope you'll be part of the show either by calling in at area code 347-308-8222. If I can get the chat room up and running, you know, feel free to chime in on that. Or you can drop us an email at walkingtheunnamedpath@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at walking_theUP. Or you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/walkingtheunnamedpath. And how have you been, Matthew? I believe it's been a while since we've... it's been a while because it's been almost a month, I think.
Yeah, it has been. Although time definitely seems to fly quickly. I've been doing very well, keeping very busy, putting energy now into getting ready for Stone and Stang, which is happening early October. So starting October 5th to October 8th in the Santa Cruz Mountains. Registration has been extended, so if any of our listeners are interested in joining us at Stone and Stang, you can still sign up. Go to stoneandstang.com, stoneandstang.com. Our keynote speaker is Andrew Raymer, author of Two Flutes Playing, which is a one of the texts that inspired Unnamed Path. Stone and Stang happens every 2 years, and it's a spiritual retreat for queer men, for spiritual men who love men. We do a lot of shamanistic work, spiritual work. Of course, it's different every year, every time. It's every 2 years. So the theme this time is silence and renewal, and subtitled Into the Cauldron. In these times of chaos and strife, we return to the cauldron of the goddess to incubate new wisdom and understanding within. Practices of silence create space for our spiritual gifts as men who love men. We come together to connect with each other, the land, ancestors, spirits of nature, and the gods. So if you're sitting on the fence and not sure if you can make it or not, visit stoneandstang.com. If you have any questions, you can reach out to me personally. I'll be happy to answer any questions, and I'm really excited. It's going to be amazing.
Gosh, it's hard to speak sometimes. I really wish I could go to certain things, but just financially, I'm not going to be able to make it this year. You know, hopefully in 2 years, depending on, you know, where they have it, because, you know, the event is, like, moves around a little bit. Correct.
I'm sorry. It's I had my connection cut out. It's what?
I'm sorry. Yeah, I know. I think we had, you know, future plans at some point to move the event around a little bit. So I'm hoping, you know, next in the next time we have Stern and Stein might be a little bit closer. Like, please.
Yeah, that could be. I don't know. I don't even know if the same committee that organized 2018 will be involved in 2020. I know those of us who organized it the past two times are thinking of taking a back seat and letting another group of folks kind of carry the torch for the next one. So I think really it's just up to, you know, who decides to be on that committee and where they decide to have it. It doesn't have to be, Stone and Sang isn't married necessarily to that location in the Santa Cruz Mountains. So who knows, maybe it will be in another part of the country.
Would be very interesting if it, they had, and I know I'd like for it to be closer to me in Texas, but could you imagine what it would be like if they had it up in Portland? That'd be interesting.
That's a beautiful part of the country. Pure magic.
Yeah. Oh no. Sorry, I got a little distracted. I just happened to run my hand over one of my cords, and it seems like the cat has been trying to chew on some of my equipment. I will have to deal with that.
Other than cats threatening your cords, how have you been these past few weeks?
I have been rather fabulous the past few weeks. Even though I'm not, unfortunately, not going to make it to Stern Sting, I did make it to Between the Worlds this year, which was so needed. I had a wonderful time there. I'm looking forward to going back next year because they asked me to be a coordinator, and also each year Between the Worlds, which inspired Stone and Sang, each year Between the Worlds has a different patron deity that is the focus or the central point for the whole festival. And this year's was Velis, Slavic god of the woods. Next year's patron, since it's a milestone year, I believe, for Between the Worlds, and it's also the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall Riots, the patron is going to be the Ancestors of Queer Spirit, which I am very excited about. Especially since one of the ancestors that they have on their ancestor altar is our founder, Hyperion. So I'm like, yeah, I kind of feel like I need to be there.
Wonderful. Yeah, I got to make it out there one of these years. Maybe next year. We'll see. There's so many wonderful events to go to each year. So,
mm-hmm.
Today, yeah, we are pleased to mm-hmm. welcome author Chris Allen to the show. Chris Allen has been studying paganism and the occult since he is an ordained minister with the Fellowship of the Phoenix and has been an initiate of traditional witchcraft since 2002. He's also a Native American Chanulpa carrier and studies the path of the Red Road. He teaches classes and workshops on magic, healing, shamanism, and necromancy. He's taught at pagan festivals such as Pagan Spirit Gathering and Between the Worlds. He continues to study and teach the magical arts to those who seek to balance the three worlds in their own lives. He is the author of Underworld, Shamanism, Myth, and Magic, and of Deeper into the Underworld, Death, Ancestors, and Magical Rites. So let's bring Chris Allen onto the air with us.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Hi, Chris. Thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure. I'm excited.
So before I start interrogating you, yes, we do an interrogation scene, every 2 weeks here.
Nice.
So for any one of our listeners who's interested in finding Chris's more about Chris or finding his books, his name is Chris Allen, Chris, C-H-R-A-S. Allen is spelled A-L-L-A-U-N. His books are available on Amazon. That's where I got them from. And Chris, please, can you tell us a little bit about your journey into paganism And what brought you to this point in your life?
So I actually grew up in a the deep, deep country in Texas, close to Houston, but like way far out in the country. And we didn't have a farm, but we had like farm animals. We had like dogs and cats and, horses and ponies and, all those things. And all my friends, they had chickens and goats and, the whole nine yards or whatever. And there used to be, well, there is, woods behind our house. And what would happen is that my father was a very, very devout Christian. And he would take us to church, and then, they would talk about God and angels and spirituality. And then when we got home from church, he would send us outside to go out and play in the woods. So I'm in, I would have countless days in the woods thinking about God and spirit and, those things. And I was very empathic as a child. I couldn't see ghosts and spirits, but I could sense them. I would talk to them, and things were like that. And then as a teenager, I remember reading an article about witchcraft and paganism in some teen magazine. I couldn't tell you which magazine it is, but it talks about nature and how we see the goddess and the universe as expresses itself through nature and things like that. And as soon as I heard it, I was like, oh my God, this is exactly how I feel. And so my very first book was Raymond Buckland's A Big Giant Blue Book, the complete book of witchcraft. And I think I was like 16 years old, and I just thought it was the coolest thing. And then it just evolved from there. And I would buy other books and read and study. And then what, 26 years later, here we are.
Awesome. I very much remember finding Uncle Bucky's Big Blue Book in Half-Price Books when I was younger. That's something to read through. So, can you tell us a little bit? Go ahead.
Say that again. I was just going to say.
I was going to ask you, but
when you're a teenager and you see things like, oh, this is how you do a candle magic, and this is how you summon the energies, and this is how you talk to the goddess. It was life-changing at the time. I knew all that book gives a whole lot of crap, I guess, because I think it's just because the title, it says it's the complete book of witchcraft. I'm like, well, I wouldn't say complete. I'd say this is an introductory, and then, I think it's okay. But, I mean, I enjoyed the book. I know it gets a whole lot of crap, but, I mean, it was life-changing for some people, so.
Yeah. No, yeah. I totally agree. With the whole, I don't know if the right word would be Renaissance, but we have so many new authors coming out in modern paganism.
A lot
of those older manuscripts are becoming out of date and obsolete. I mean, they still hold, a certain spot in people's hearts. Like, we're just talking right now about Uncle Bucky's Big Blue Book. But, we definitely have so much more coming out nowadays, especially like your two books, which I need to get my hands on physical copies. I'm very much a person who wants a physical book. But, can you tell us a little bit about, in your bio, you mentioned you're involved with the Fellowship of the Phoenix. Can you tell us a little bit about what the Fellowship of the Phoenix is and your involvement with them?
Sure. So back in 2001, I was in Matthew Ellenwood's history school, so magical and healing training. And I became a teacher, and I would help him teach new students in magic. And eventually, and it was more geared towards a gay man at the time. And so eventually people kept asking us, oh, you need to start a circle. You need to start a certain. And Matthew had already had several circles before, and he was just like, well, if we're going to do it, we're going to do it. And just, you know, and become 501c3 and have our church status and things like that. And so myself Matthew and five other people, there were seven of us, and we started, at the time it was called the Brotherhood of the Phoenix, because it was all just gay, bisexual and transgendered men at the time. And we did that for about 10 years, and we have our own cosmology, mythology with the queer spirit and things like that. And then a couple years ago, we decided that we wanted to be completely open with the queer community, and so we changed our bylaws to include lesbian, bisexual women, transgendered women. So we changed our name from the Brotherhood to the Fellowship. And to be honest, I think it's the best thing we've ever done, because for myself, there is the power of just gay and bisexual guys, but there's also a deeper power of the entire queer community, because I have some colleagues and friends who are lesbian and bisexual women who have their own power and their own sacred things, and I really thoroughly enjoy doing circle with them as well. We're currently going strong, and I know we're having a ritual here in October. I'll have to pull up the dates so I can let people know who are in the Chicago area. But yeah, that's about us.
Awesome. Chris, first I want to thank you for your books. To be honest, I've only just started the second one, but okay. I thoroughly enjoyed the first one, Underworld, Shamanism, Myth, and Magic. And I find it really helped me a lot. You know, I'm not only, you know, trained in this kind of work, but I've also started teaching others. And, you know,
very cool.
You know, as teachers, we never have all the answers. You know, we just keep on learning and our students
right.
ask us difficult questions we never thought of before, and I'm recommending your book to my students, actually, because I feel it's very useful for anyone in work. Can you tell us what inspired you to write on this particular topic?
Because I'm afraid. No, I'm just kidding. you know, it was so funny because how I, you know, when I was a kid in the forest and going on in the woods, to me, whenever I found like the darker places, the more earthy, primal places of the earth, that was home for me. And all the stories about, you know, Hansel and Gretel and witches and Baba Yaga and all those things, that resonated with me, whatever, you know, not so much the scary eating children's type of thing, but just being out in the primal nature, you know, And then when I was in my training and in my 20s and everything, since I didn't have any books about, you know, necromancy and how to build an ancestor altar and how to journey into the underworld. There were a few basic books, and I remember when the fellowship first started, Matthew, who was my teacher back then, was just like, hey, you tend to gravitate towards the darker underworld type things. Why don't you start to do some research about that? And I could hardly find anything. And I found a few things, but they were more like obscure, you know, Christian monks who like regurgitated the Goetia. I mean, I found things like that, which I think is fun and fascinating, but it isn't anything about the ancestors. So finally, I attended a workshop by Milo Duquette, and he said, if you want to be an author, write a book you wish you had when you were in your training and your self-discovery. So I said, okay, I'm going to write a book on the underworld. So I taught some workshops at PSG. I taught some workshops at PTW way long time ago, back in 2005. And then I just found information on the ancestors, and then shamanism and death and this and that, and it from start to finish, it took me probably about 3 or 4 years to write, simply because at the time you couldn't find anything. Like, it was so hard to find any resources. And I don't like to cannibalize resources. Like, you know how some authors will use the same 15 books for everything? I didn't want to do that. I wanted to get out of the pool of pagan authors and research. Like, I used dissertations from archaeologists. I used mythology, and that was the other thing. All of the books have a lot of mythology, because as I was going through and I was learning about the ancestors, and plus everything that I talk about, I do in my practice. So there's nothing that I just have out there just to have. So everything that's in the books, I actually use. But anyway, so after, you know, researching and trying to find all the information, it felt like it didn't have a thread. I was trying to find a thread to connect all the techniques put together. And finally, I was inspired to add in a whole lot of mythologies. So like Persephone, the descent into the underworld and things like that. And I also, there is a whole lot of Greco-Roman mythology, but I tried to branch out to like Egyptian, Celtic, Nordic, and Native American, because it amazes me that we live in the USA, and the majority of the people don't know any of the stories of the land here. They don't know the stories of the Cherokee or the Lakota or Apache. So I made sure to add some of those, you know. And that's basically the journey I took. And then I actually sent it out to just a couple publishers. I didn't go crazy. One publisher was like, yeah, this is kind of too dark for us. I'm like, okay. So I sent it to a publisher that was known for their darker And then they were like, this isn't dark enough for us. I'm like, oh, my God, I can't win. So finally I sent it to Mandrake of Oxford, and they took it, and they signed me up. So that's the story of that.
As I was reading, there were so many quotes and little statements that really resonated with me. So I was taking notes and jotting things down. One of those, for example, Anuvin, and that is the Welsh otherworld, tests the character and will. If you do not find your divine will and face your fears, you cannot tread deeper into the mysteries of death.
Right,
can you give
correct.
Us an example? And I found that really powerful. And I think that's of tremendous value for people to be aware of when they're undertaking this kind of work. Can you give us an example from your own personal experience of how this plays out or how this may play out?
How it plays out? Well, I mean, part of my training in paganism was know yourself. The most powerful healing is to know who you are and where your fears come from. And so I've had that from the get-go. You know, it's all about self-improvement, self-help, things like that. And I read a whole lot of psychology and a lot of, can you think about it, half of ritual is psychology because, I mean, what is a ceremony? It is a... it's ritual action that creates an environment to change your psyche in order to do whatever, you know, to do some healings or spells or whatever. One of the things, so when I was a kid, I was the second out of four boys. So I was a little child, and I always played it safe. So I was, and my other brothers, they were always like hell raisers, and they did this and did that. And I was a good kid. So, but the reason I was a good kid, because I was scared to do anything. Like, if someone goes, here, Chris, jump off that bridge. I'm like, no, I'm not doing that. You go first. And I never did anything first. I didn't like to travel by myself. I didn't do any of those things. And so finally I was just like, I'm going to address all these fears. And through addressing the fears and through addressing, your own shadow, because you know the buzz for it in paganism is shadow work, you know. What is shadow work? Well, if you know anything about psychology, is that our subconscious is basically our psychic shelves. So anything we don't want to deal with or anything that scares us, we hide it in our subconscious. But then what happens? It blows up. Eventually, if we don't deal with our crap, it blows up, and it manifests as a fear, as anger, as disease, or what have you. So, through all my research and self-discovery, it's like the more I learned about demons, the more I learned about the scary things, the more I realized that these demons is us. It's us. And when you're journeying into the underworld and things, you can only get so far because the deeper you go, the more you're going to have blocks, the more you have like the watcher at the threshold, the gatekeeper, the demon, whatever, you know. And as soon as you deal with your shadow, your fear, whatever, it goes away. And it's interesting because for those of us who practice with the Goetia basically, yes, you treat it as these are our primal spirits, who you have to learn to control. What happens, and I hate to say side effect, but there's a direct correlation. Each of the demons, when you control the goetic demons, you're also learning to control the subconscious energy of your mind. So when you summon, let's just say, I don't know, whichever demon, whatever powers he has, as soon as you summon him and learn to control him, you're opening up psychic ability within your own for consciousness. So, with all these things together, the more you deal with your shadow, the more you go deeper, and deeper in a healthy way. It doesn't mean, like, I don't do the whole, you know, face your fears by, if you're scared of bugs, put bugs on you. I don't believe in that. I think it's anti-productive, or I think it's counterproductive. Like, for example, I'm not a fan of spiders, and if you put a spider on me, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to shoot you dead. Like, don't do it. I'm not going to say, oh, I have a spider on me. I'm so glad you did that. I face my fear. No, that's not how it works. It's not how it works. Like, I will flip out. But anyway, so my point is you have to face your fears in a healthy way. That's why some of the techniques I give are to help you address these things. You know, and whenever you do things and you call the gods, you call the ancestors, they're there to help you. They're there to guide you and protect you so that when you do face your own demons, you do it in a healthy, productive way. So there's that.
Yeah, and one thing that I love about your book is in many of the chapters, you illustrate these points by drawing on myths and sacred stories from different traditions. Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
I was thrilled with the diversity of exposure. That was really fresh. And in other materials, at least that I've been exposed to, that touch on ancestor work or touch on spirit journeying to the underworld, it's much more the underworld is portrayed as a much smaller world and much less diverse. Mm-hmm. And before I read your book, I was almost of the philosophy that, well, you know, Hades and Niflhel and the Duat are just different names for the same place. And upon reading your book, and it's not something that you said, but it was an impression that I got, that the underworld is as vast and complex, if not more so, than the entire globe, and that in this realm, in this vast sphere, this vast dimension, the ancestors of every different people and the underworlds of every different culture exist side by side and has equal weight.
Yep.
To one another.
Yep.
And I got to thank you, because it really kind of resolved something that didn't feel right to me,
right.
The way I previously understood it. And then the way you present it, I had this aha moment. Okay, there's this wonderful
it.
Capacity.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, so how that even happened is when I was doing all this research, I was reading about Hades, about the Duat, about the Helheim, about this and that, and the Mayans, and it was just so fascinating. Like, I think the thing I enjoyed about the whole process is all these cultures who never had any interactions with each other, especially the Egyptians and the Maya, had a very similar cosmology, very similar. And I was like, wow, that's really interesting. You know, and that's why I did it, because we tend to enjoy one truth. You know, a lot of us come from a Christian background, and there's only one right way to do things. And and, you know, we're so linear. We have to remember the spiritual universe has its own time, has its own space, has its own way of doing things. Like, if you know anything about quantum physics or comic books, we talk about the multiverse a lot, the multiverse. And what that means is there's layer after layer after layer of with different universes all on top of each other, and they're all correct, you know. And I talk about, I think it's in the first book, I talk about how when you die, whatever you think that the afterlife is going to be, that's what it is, because our thoughts shape energy, you know. And think about it. In magical practice, here in our daily lives, we're taught, you know, if you can change your thoughts, you can change your life. But think about it, being directly in the spirit, how much power you have to, like, change your surroundings. So, you know, the Greeks, when they died, they imagined Hades, and, oh, look, it's Hades. And if everybody has the same mythology, then all those people are going to be in the same place. I do think that the dead can evolve and grow, and you're not stuck there. Like, for example, that's how your ancestors can be summoned into your circle. You know, you call them with your heart and your being and your breath and things, and they hear you and they feel your pull and they come. They're not trapped in the afterlife. A lot of people think, like, because necromancy has a lot of fear, you know, so they're like, a lot of the old spells, you had to appease Hecate, and you had to appease the gatekeeper, and you had to appease Hermes, and you had to appease Persephone, and then eventually you appease Hades, and then you ask him to allow your ancestor to come through the gate. It's like this long, long process thing, which makes people think, oh, the dead are trapped in the afterlife. They're not trapped. They're taken care of. Like, it's their home, you know. Like Hela, the Nordic goddess of the dead, she doesn't trap her the dead in Helheim. She takes care of them. You know, she's the goddess of death, and she's a very nurturing goddess to the dead, you know.
And then I wanted to go back to what you talk about in terms of what we loosely call shadow work, and recognizing that the more you work on yourself, the deeper you can go into the underworld. And to me, one of the most powerful myths that you retell in your book that illustrated that is the journey to Xibalba.
Xibalba, yep.
Xibalba, yes. And to me, that was just fascinating and instructive at the same time. And I kind of wanted to hear from you. What's your takeaway from that particular story for practitioners such as ourselves?
Well, you have to think about it. Especially now, there are so many books about how to journey, how to astral project, how to go to the upper world, how to go to the underworld. And so you have all these people who don't know what they're doing, who don't have the experience, who don't have the training, and they're trying, I'm going to go to the bowels of hell. Okay. Well, I mean, think about it. Our teachers, our spiritual guides, we have spiritual guides in the underworld as well as the heavens and things. And so they're going to try to take care of us. And how they take care of us necessarily, oh, here, let me pull you aside and teach you. Sometimes to teach you, they have to scare the hell out of you. So, like, for example, in Shabalba, there's a demon called the pus demon. There's also the blood clot demon. And there's the disease demon. There's the famine demon. There's the thirst demon. So all these things that bring you into death, there's a demon for. And I kind of gotten to the point where I don't enjoy the word demon, because that's like, oh, the exorcist getting possessed is very Christian. All demon means in a pagan context, I think, is a very primal, chthonic, somewhat chaotic, or simply chaotic spirit that's designed to teach. And they don't always teach us in a gentle way. Sometimes it's very aggressive. Sometimes they teach us like, hey, look at your stuff, and look at your problems. You don't have a job. You treat people like crap. You need to face your demons yourself before we can let you go further. Because once you go further and deeper, there's power. There's all kinds of tales about the power of the spirit world. Think about King Arthur and the Grail. The Grail is a healing tool that's in the other world, that's in the spirit world. The Nordics talk about the wells of wisdom, of inspiration, of regeneration, of power. The Celts talk about how there's cauldrons of rebirth and regeneration in the underworlds and things like that. So what happens is the spirits have to protect these things. They have to protect these spiritual treasures, because if you're not evolved enough to face your own shadow, then how can you be evolving enough to take ownership of these spiritual treasures? I mean, think about it. In our society, we don't know how to take care of ourselves. We don't know how to take care of our car, our job, each other. So the spirits are like, no, before I can show you the cauldron of regeneration or rebirth or whatever, you're going to have to face your stuff, you know. So, and to be honest, I think that's so cool. It's so cool to be scared to death enough to, where I'm like, oh my God, I have to grow. I have to evolve. And that's how I approach the whole underworld thing is, it's not just to be creepy, scary, and cool. It's to evolve. It's to be better, you know.
Well, you write that the benefits of working with the underworld can include greater understanding, healing of self, healing of others. Mm-hmm. What's one of the most significant benefits that you've gained through doing this work?
So I'm a massage therapist, energy healer. I do ceremonies and I do lots of healing for people. And it's healing because, you know, we've all had some type of abuse or hurt or pain or some bad thing that happened. And it's there's also a sense of we've all been selfish. We've all hurt other people. Where does that hurt come from? Why do we hold on to it? Why do we allow someone else's abuse to continually affect us year after year after year? So how do we face that? How do we challenge ourselves to go into our darkness, into our dark places, to get healing and resolution, you know? One of the things I teach in my healing classes is at some point you have to learn how to forgive the person that hurt you. And when I say that, every student's like, oh, no, 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 that can't, I will never forgive. And I'm like, well, what's happening? Well, the first thing is that when you forgive, you're not saying what horrible thing happened is okay. You're not giving them permission to harm you or others. What you're saying when you forgive is a couple of things. The first thing you're saying is, I'm no longer accepting your bad energy. I'm letting it go. I'm not going to poison my heart and my soul and my spirit with your bad thing. The other thing is that being in the philosophy of a healer, to have true healing, everyone needs to heal. I need to heal. The person who hurt you needs to heal. And if I am holding on to hate and to hate and to hate, I'm not allowing that person to heal. I'm not allowing myself to heal. And so to forgive just simply says, I'm cutting the cord. You can have all your energy back. I'm taking all my energy back, and I'm going to separate myself and heal and move on. And I'm going to allow you to heal and move on. To me, that's forgiveness. And when we do that, or before we do that, you know, we're going to have to go back in that darkness, like what happened. Because in energy healing, we say we don't treat the symptoms. You know, we treat the core of it, and we don't repress. So what happens is that we have to get the pain out. And think about it. If you step on like a nail, when you pull it out, it's going to hurt like hell. The only way to heal that foot is if you experience the pain of taking out the nail. Because the only way to do it. So, to get the pain, the hurts, and the abuse out, when you're healing, you're going to have to feel it again. It doesn't mean you have to relive the experience. It just means that as you're healing, you're going to have thoughts that you thought were long gone. You're going to have some pain that you thought was long gone. However, once you're done, once you feel the pain, once you feel the shadow, you're done. And then you can truly heal from that abuse or that horrible thing that happened. And, you know, that's the shadow that we have to work with. And I even say, even if you think like a spirituality is a bunch of crap and I don't believe in the universe or God and Goddess in those things, well, by journeying into the underworld, what you're also doing is you're journeying into your own subconscious. And any shadows and demons that you find, or your pains and your abuses and your dark things, and that when you deal with those and you let them go, then you can heal.
You write that the living often find the dead and underworld frightening because we fear death. And I think you mentioned even in trying to get your work published, you pushed up against some of that. You know, we have so many taboos about death and the dead and the spirits thereof. What suggestions do you have for practitioners, for people who are just starting to learn this work, who may be wrestling with that kind of fear?
Face your demon, man. I actually, in the second book, Deeper into the Underworld, I actually have you symbolically symbolically die. So I have you do a meditation about what it is to die, what it is to feel loss, and to detach from your physical, from your home, from your family, from your possessions. I even go so far as to have a funeral for you, and then to have a journey about being with the ancestors in the afterlife. So I suggest that first, and just so you know, when you go all out and have a funeral for yourself, and you have a shroud or a black blanket over you, and you have candles and flowers, and it's weird, it's bizarre, and it really makes you think about those things. But there is a light at the end of the tunnel, so to speak, with no pun intended, but kind of intended. There's a light at the end of the tunnel, a sense of, and the practice, after you symbolically die, you're joined with the ancestors. You're joined by your great-grandfathers, your great-grandmothers, all these spirits who are here all the time, who we get to see and who comfort us and who teach us and who help us. I know Samhain is coming up, and Samhain is one of those things to where we enjoy horror movies, we enjoy scary things, we enjoy dressing up. I mean, part of it is we enjoy the pageantry of it, but there's also this whole adrenaline thing of what if, you know? And I can understand why some people are so hesitant to do this type of thing, because some people think that if you bring death into the home, then someone could die. Because I do know, and I don't remember the time period, but the Greeks did not bring any statues of Hades into the home. Persephone, yes. Hades, not so much. Because if you think about it, why would you invite the god of death in your home? Wouldn't that bring death? And by the way, I do have statues of, I have an altar to death in my home, and I speak to death all the time. We're good friends. and so I can understand that there's, a fear. And I mean, a long time ago, people died of basic things: starvation, hunger, TB, for tuberculosis, and things. And so pregnancy killed a lot of people. And so there was this fear of death and the fear of having anything to do with it. However, as I've been saying, the more you face your shadow, face your death, and face this thing, it's empowering, for example, I can't imagine for not having an ancestral altar in my home. The whole idea of not speaking to my ancestors every day is just bizarre to me. Because, to be honest, it's very comforting. I'm not worried about burglars. I'm not worried about break-ins. Because of the ancestors in my home, feels like a home. It feels very comforting and warm, and everybody says so when they come in. And yeah, partly that's my energy, but at the same time, it's the ancestors, helping and protecting us. So I also think it's your point of view too, because I was never turned off by, vampires and zombies and death and skeletons. I'm like, oh, yay, skeletons, awesome. So, I mean, yeah, that's my take on it, I guess.
One thing from the book that I found powerfully instructive, there was so much in there and so much more we could talk about. the story of Kate, and I think this is relevant especially to practitioners of Unnamed Path. We are trained death walkers. We are trained to help spirits that may be stuck here. And in the story of Kate is an example of this spirit who is not, it seems like in the beginning, you think, oh, she's haunting the loved one she left behind, and it's haunting, and how do we get rid of her? But it was actually her loved one, her living partner, who his grief was holding her bound to this world.
Right.
And she was the one who was being afflicted. And that was such a twist on the way this story is normally told. Do you find that this happens a lot, this kind of dynamic?
It's interesting because depending upon the tradition, like each religion has its taboos. And when this happened, like, you know, when this happened, I went into the situation thinking, oh, I'll do a blessing and essentially an exorcism, and you help the spirit evolve. And that's another thing I want to address too. Like, when I help a spirit transition, it's not like I banish you, get out. It's not like that at all. It's more of a, hey, let's talk. You're not supposed to be here. Let me call your ancestors. Let me help you. Let me guide you. And it's always in a place of healing, you know. And so I thought I was going to do that. And so, and I'm talking to the spirit, and I'm a little clairvoyant. So I'm seeing the energies. I'm like, the energies are around the spirit. It doesn't look right. And so I'm talking to my client, who's asking me about all this and blah, blah, blah. And after conversation, I'm saying that the grief of the living is energetically trapping the spirits in this plane. And I was like, wow, this is sad. Like, it breaks your heart because you're not doing it on purpose. And you can't really blame them because, you know, if it happened to me, I might inadvertently do the exact same thing. So in the book, I talk about how to handle it, how to address it. You basically have a ancestral intervention, and you have everybody's ancestors, and you have to cut cords. And the book tells all about it, but and you have to cut cords, and you have to help the living heal. You know, you have to help them let go. And it's I've dealt with similar situations all the time, and to be honest, I approach it with a case by case basis, because if, for example, a long time ago, I was 21 years old, and I had a very bad relationship, and I left the house, and I didn't want it. I was too proud to go to my parents' house because I was like, they're just going to say I told you so and blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like walking around thinking, okay, do I go home? Do I go and see a friend? What I do? And this lady pulls up in a car. He was in the gay area of Houston. And she goes,
the Montrose.
Do you, huh? And she goes,
the Montrose, yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. And she says, to go. And I did have a place to go. I could go home, but I didn't want to because I was upset. And so she says, and she was a very sweet older lady, probably in her 50s or whatever. And she goes, here, come home with me. And I'm like, okay. And I get in her car. And she takes me home, and I'm thinking, I'll just sleep on the couch and just leave. Well, all of a sudden, she goes, the reason I took you home with me is because my daughter, who really used to be heavily involved in the gay community, and this is something that she would do. She died a year ago, and she would have been about your age. I'm like, holy crap, really? Yes. So it was very healing for this lady to show me pictures of her daughter. And at the time, I could feel the daughter's presence. And I didn't have the training I do now, and I didn't know if she wasn't there on, you know, if the mother was psychically trapping her or whatever. All I knew was I could feel the daughter. And by me being there, and she was able to tell her story, tell me how her daughter died in a car accident, tell me about her school, how she grew up. And it was interesting because she tells me I really needed to tell her story tonight because I was really feeling grief. And I really needed someone just to be with, you know. The interesting thing is, probably 18 years later, I'm in the bathroom. So this was, so when that happened, that was 1997. So in like 2014, all of a sudden I felt a strong energy go through me. And I instantly knew the lady who told me her story about her daughter. She was checking in on me one last time before she herself transitioned. And I was just like, and I knew it in my bones it was her. I just knew it, you know. And so, you know, so hauntings or whatever aren't always as black as white as you think. You know, it's, I think it takes a specialized person, a specialized heart. I think it's the heart of a healer to help the dead transition. Because, I mean, think about it. They're confused. Their loved ones who they left behind are confused, especially anytime you have a spouse or a parent loses a child, or even if it's your best friend who dies suddenly, you know, there's always this type of confusion on both sides. And you have to have compassion, you know, you have to have compassion for the spirit because, you know, I mean, think about it. They had a life and now they don't. And now, where am I supposed to go? I don't know what I'm supposed to do. Well, here, let me help you. Let me help you transition. Let me call your ancestors. Let me see how we can heal all the parties involved, you know. And that's how I approach it. You know, I always approach it like that.
Thank you for sharing that. And
absolutely.
Michael, do we have a caller?
Yes, we do. Let me go ahead and bring
Yay.
The caller on. Caller, you're alive. David.
Hi.
Did he time out? Oh no.
Did we lose our caller?
Well, he's showing up in the switchboard. Let me ping him real quick, because he may have put it on mute without realizing what he was realizing that he did that. So let me.
And in the meantime, Chris, let me ask you. I just started reading your second book. Do you want to tell our listeners a little bit about, because we've covered some of the things you talk about in the first book, can you tell our listeners a little bit about what you discuss in the second book?
So the second book is more hands-on, I think. It's the first chapter teaches you about death and the and what happens energetically as you die with your chakras and things like that. I talked about the angel of death and so forth. And then I talk about ancient pagan practices of the dead and temples of the dead and things like that. There's a chapter on honoring the ancestors in your home and in daily magical practice. I teach you how to create an ancestor altar, how to conjure the ancestors in your own magical practice. And I also have you face your own death. And remember how I was talking about how I make you have your own funeral and you do a symbolic death and your journey with the ancestors and things like that. That's all in the second book. The other thing I talk about is healing ancestral karma. So I actually I give a technique about how to astral project back in time through your bloodline, and I teach you how to go and to find the karma and to heal it with energy. And the reason that's so important is whenever a family has a hereditary disease like MS or diabetes or whatever the pathology is, if it's hereditary, it usually means there's some ancestral karma that has to be healed. So I teach how to go back in time through your blood to heal that. And to be honest, I'm very, very proud of that because it's something I developed myself, and I've never seen anything like it before. I also teach how to summon the dead with skulls and bones and things like that, you know. Something that I learned in traditional witchcraft through taking a skull and summoning the dead into a skull. I teach you how to do that. And then I have a chapter on so every book I have kind of a random chapter that relates to the book, but it's kind of different, I guess. I have a chapter on blood magic, and there's all these taboos on you're not supposed to use blood. It conjures demons, and you know, my philosophy is great. Let's conjure demons so that I can work on my shadow and I can deal with my own crap. So I'm fine with it. Yeah. So I teach you how to do that, and then the final chapter is introductory magical protection, because the reason I added it was because I'm talking about conjuring up like the dead and spirits and this and that, and I'm like thinking, you know, it's going to happen. Someone who doesn't have any training whatsoever is going to get themselves in trouble and not know how to banish something. So I was like, well, let me throw in some banishing techniques and some self-protection just in case someone doesn't know it. And, you know, I'm hoping everybody at least has a broom and can banish something, or can do the lesser banishing ritual, or at least if nothing else can grab a crystal and a candle and just bless the house or something, you know. And I teach all that too in the book. So, yeah.
Sure. I just started it, and I'm very much looking forward to going through the rest of it. I think our caller is back.
Yes.
Can we bring our caller on?
He is on.
Hi.
Hopefully he's on. Hopefully he didn't disconnect again. Hi, David.
Hey.
caller, do you have a question? Oh my gosh, did he disconnect again?
Oh, maybe it's a
bad
connection.
Can they, like, type it out in the chat, maybe?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear
you.
Yes, I can hear you.
Yay, I don't know what's wrong with my phone.
What's your question?
Hi, Chris. My name is Dave Short. I'm one of the brother initiates of the Unnamed Path, and I just want to first of all say that I've been listening to the interview and just going, yes, yes, yes.
awesome. I love it.
What you've been relaying has really been echoing a lot of my personal experience and my partner Tommy Starchild's personal experience as well. So thank you so much for writing the book. It's definitely a book I definitely want to get both your first and second book. My question is, you know, one of the things that helped spark the development of the Unnamed Path was the understanding that we as men who love men had fulfilled certain roles in history, and that as society had evolved and as society you know, brought us to where we are, we had been pulled away from that in certain ways, and mm-hmm. the re-emergence of the gay rights movement is a manifestation of us trying to return to that side of ourselves where we're involved in the community, out and proud, and available to our community to be of service. And I'm just wondering, in your work in looking at things of the underworld, I'm wondering if you've come across any stories about that specifically pertain to, you know, whether it be men who love men or the queer identity or the mm-hmm. other identity, as because obviously queer, gay, et cetera, were not words that were used in the ancient times. But I'm wondering if there's any kind of queer world stories that you've come across, because I know we in the Unnamed Path have our own mythology and our own stories. And I'm just wondering, what's been your experience in coming to those kinds of stories, and can you relay any to us or recommend us looking into any?
You know, I haven't found a whole lot about that. A few teeny tiny things here and there, like, for example, the descent of Inanna. When she goes to the underworld and is trapped by the queen of the underworld, her, I guess, helper, assistant, whatever you want to call him, he's gay, and he goes down to help her escape from the underworld prison. The only other thing I personally have found was, and I don't remember the whole story, but the gist is that Bacchus wants to, his mother had died, and there's a gatekeeper at the gate of Hades, and the gatekeeper, he's gay, and of course Bacchus is beautiful, and Bacchus says, hey, I want to go to the underworld and to Hades to see my mom, and the gatekeeper says, only if I can have sex with you. And then Bacchus says, well, I'll tell you what, after I go down and I see her, I see my mother, I'll have sex with you. So Bacchus goes down to the underworld and sees his mom. Well, while that's happening, and I don't remember how, but somehow there's a battle or a fight, and the gatekeeper is killed. So Bacchus comes out of the cave into the underworld back here, and he finds out that the gatekeeper had died, and he has to fulfill that promise. So he finds a tree branch and he carves himself a dildo, and he basically penetrates himself in the name of the gatekeeper to fulfill his promise that he would have sex with him. So those are the only two that have to do with the underworld that I have found. I'm hoping that there's others. I just haven't found them. You know, but in the ancient world too, in the Greeks and Romans, being bisexual was very common. So I'm wondering if just some of these heroes who traveled to the underworld were probably bisexual, but they didn't. The retelling, you have to remember, like, there are a ton of gay stories out there in gay mythology. It's just that they don't teach it in grade school. Because I remember I found a book. I'm like, oh, my God, it's gay. It's the Greek gods, but for gay stories. I was so happy, you know, had Apollo and Zeus and all these things. I'm guessing what probably happened, that people who wrote the stories down probably edited out all the gay stuff. That's what I'm guessing too, because, you know, if you think about it, like Bullfinch, Christian, all the people, all the, like the Prose Edda, the people who, Snorri, who wrote the Prose Edda, Christian. So anything that was too gay, I'm sure they edited out the stories. And that's unfortunate. So I'm hoping that they have others and I find them. If they do, I'll certainly like, write a book about that at some point.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your answer.
my long 20-minute answer.
Oh, goodness. When you were telling your story, all I could think was splinters. I was like, oh gosh.
Ouch. Well, I'm guessing he was a good carver. I don't know.
Well, hopefully you have yet a lot of really fine sandpaper with him.
Right.
You know, in light of what we just talked about and the topic of queer men and the role of queerness in terms of
mm-hmm.
the lore of the underworld, do you feel comfortable telling us a little bit about how being queer has informed your spiritual journey and your approach to this work?
It's so strange because I've been out since I was 17 or 18 years old, and so that was 25 years ago, so I never think about it so much anymore. But I will say, like, for example, being gay, I have the opportunity to be in touch with my receiving a feminine side. So when I do like the trance techniques or the healing techniques or the journeying, I don't have any hang-ups about it because, like, for example, have you guys ever heard of a scyther or seething or anything like that?
Yes,
so it's a Nordic trance technique that it's basically a shamanistic technique of journeying into the underworld or the upper world. But part of it is that it's also shaking and swaying and convulsing yourself into a trance. While the Vikings were like, that's a female thing to do. You know, it's a women's magic. So I don't have any hang-ups about doing it at all, because I'm like, I'm gay. I don't give a shit. Well, are we allowed to cuss on this?
Yes.
Like, I don't. Okay, good. I don't care about you know, perception about, oh, that's a feminine technique. You know, I also heard, and I think it's so dumb, oh, girls are good at scrying and guys are good at spellcraft and sending the energies. I'm like, that's so dumb, so stereotypical, because I mean, I'm a good scryer, and but I'm also a good, I'm versatile, I'm a good sender as well. And so, I mean, and I was, how I was trained is, you know, and I was just talking about this today, of, I was always taught that when it comes to spellcraft and magic, you're either a seer or you're a sender. So meaning you're either the magician that controls the energy, or you're a seer who can see the energy. And you normally can't do both. I just thought that was the dumbest thing I've ever heard. And so, I mean, I will say I'm a good sender, because I can really – I mean, I think that's how come I'm a healer, because I can just channel those energies. However, I have really worked very hard to become a good seer. I mean, I didn't have to practice a whole lot to be a sender. I didn't have to, but scrying, I had to practice and practice and practice. And now I'm pretty good at both. So, so when it comes to being gay, I think for that helped a whole lot. Also, invocation of the gods. If I invoke a goddess, I'm completely fine with it. Completely fine. I don't feel, you know, unempowered at all. If anything, it gives me extra power, because I'm not female, so I don't have those experiences. So when I invoke a goddess, I kind of have a teeny tiny taste of that experience, and it helps me, and it teaches me, and it helps me, can me grow as a magician, you know.
Well, Chris, I do have to say, the material in your book, and also the things that you've said today on the air with us, for me is very affirming, because a lot of your approach is so much in line with what we've been taught in our tradition, and Unnamed Path is mainly a tradition that's taught to us by queer ancestors.
Love it.
It's always exciting to have that. Okay, let's verify the data. You know, independent verification of data, and that's happening.
Yeah.
And you're tapping into this material and bringing forth so much important medicine. So I'm very excited, very grateful. Before we wrap up, are there any announcements that you make, or anything happening that you want to share with our listeners?
Well, I will say, and I'm not sure how much I'm supposed to say, but whatever. I have a third book coming out soon. And I'm taking the opposite approach though. So I've spent so many years in the underworld, I'm going to tackle the upper world now with the gods and the angels and the stars and planets and things like that. I don't have a release date as of yet, but fall. That's all I know, fall.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, but just – so I'll post it on Facebook. You guys, whoever – is out there, please feel free to friend request me on Facebook. I also have a professional page. It's just called Chris Allen. What is it called? It's called Chris Allen, writer, teacher, healer. You can join that, and I post everything on both pages and things like that. So. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Awesome.
Chris, thank you so much for taking the time to be with
us. Thank you.
And I'm very excited, and Thank you to our listeners for tuning in. Feel free to reach out to Michael or to me if you have any suggestions for future topics. We're doing this for you. We're here to help nourish the community, to nourish the people. So our ears are open, and we're lining up some really exciting topics for the next couple months, but we definitely look forward to hearing from you. So be blessed. Take care. And Michael, is there a song we can play out with?
I am looking for one right now.
Hey, Matthew.
Trying to start.
Yes.
Well, I'm still on. I just wanted to do another plug for Stone and Stain, and to let folks know that, you know, part of the work that we'll be doing is be doing work in the underworld and connecting with the energies of the underworld. And so if anything that you've heard in this wonderful, wonderful discussion between Matthew and Michael and Chris has inspired you to want to have some hands-on experience, I encourage you to visit stoneandstaying.com and attend Stone and Staying the first weekend in October upcoming.
I'll
hang up now.
Thank you, David.
Love you all. Bye.
Love you. Bye-bye.
Oh, goodness. Oh. Still trying to decide on the song. But can you believe that this is our 48th episode, Matthew? You have two more, and we will have hit 50 episodes.
Wow. Well, we put a lot of hard work in.
Let me. You know what?
And we have wonderful listeners
this
to keep us motivated.
Yes. Yes, we do. Well, you know, it's not someone yet. I was trying to find something to play for the Equinox. I may have passed a few songs while I was going through. But, you know, I don't know. This song just kind of popped out at me. So I'm going to play us out with Moon Pass by Kiva. And, yeah, thank you again, Chris, for joining us tonight. And
thank you.
Thank you, Matthew, for lining Chris up for the show. You know, I have to get your – I need to get your second book because that I really need to read that. And I hope everyone has a wonderful rest of their Sunday, and we will be back in a couple of weeks. So, this is Moon Path by Kiva. Again, that was Kiva, Moonpath. And just chiming in real quick before I end the show to remind you, the best way to get in touch with Matthew or myself is either on Facebook at facebook.com/walkingtheunnamedpath or sending us an email at walkingtheunnamedpath@gmail.com. And yes, thank you again, Chris, for being on the show with us today. And we look forward to hearing from all of you amazing listeners about today's episode and some future ideas. So have a blessed night and goodbye.
You're listening to Pagans Tonight. Pagans unite on Pagans Tonight. Many paths, one network. For over 5 years, we've been the place to connect with the best, brightest, and most trusted voices in the pagan world. Every night is Pagans Tonight.